Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Cincinnati. Padres, Reds, beginning of a six-game road trip. Padres coming off a series win over the Nationals, which followed a series win over the Royals. Where would you like to start, Ryan?
Right there. Back-to-back series wins. I think important series wins after losing 3 of 4 in Los Angeles. But yet, you know, there's still some nagging stuff that pops up here. And, you know, Kevin, you had a story in today's paper about it being roughly the midpoint of the season, and what do we know, right? And you had mentioned that this is, and I'm going to paraphrase, a good ball club in need of an offense, right? That, you know, the hitting hasn't been coming through, that they need to improve there. I'm going to ask you a big picture question. Relative to expectations, where do you think the Padres are today?
Do you mean offensively? Do you mean that they're 8 over .500? Because the answers would be different. I mean, 8 over .500, right. Kind of?
Overall.
Go ahead.
Overall.
8 over .500 is about where I would expect them to be. I mean, if you told me 10, if you told me 6, yeah, I'm down with that. That's maybe where I thought they'd be. Maybe. And then you say, well, then why aren't they better? I guess I felt like they wouldn't have to win every game 1-0, 3-2. Maybe the occasional 4-3, all these 1 and 2 run wins. They have a very good record relative to the rest of the league in games in which they score 3 or fewer runs. That's neat and all, and good teams win low scoring games, but that record's still like 10 under 500 because you need to score. So that's where it's at. I think it's troubling. They have a plus 23 run differential, I believe. And 21 of those runs obviously came in one game where they won 21-0. That's a 21 run differential. That doesn't happen. So like it's tough to see them going forward without hitting more, and hitting more meaning scoring more.
Right. And hitting more, meaning they're good players. They're great players playing like great players, right?
Amen. Because you can talk trade deadline, which, you know, yes, absolutely need some help. You can talk bottom of the order. You can talk Xander Bogaerts, who, look, I'm kind of back to focusing. I called it the core six because Jake Cronenworth and Xander Bogaerts are important. Okay. And they're also paid fairly well. Obviously Jake isn't even half of what Xander makes, but if you want to be realistic in real time, then you can't expect that Xander Bogaerts is a carry the team kind of guy. All right. And we've never, even though I'm probably president of the fan club, you wouldn't say Jake Cronenworth is a carry the team kind of guy. So I'm back to the core four, and I got to make another note that Luis Arraez isn't necessarily a carry the team kind of guy, but when Luis does well, the team does well. So maybe he's not the drive in 4 runs, home runs, the gigantic monster games, game after game after game, like Fernando Tatis Jr., Jackson Merrill can be, Manny Machado. But Luis is a part of that core four. So we could talk about all these other things, whoever else, the catchers aren't performing well, the left fielder, yada, yada. If the core four are not performing like they should, the Padres are not going to win enough games.
Right. Xander Bogaerts missed the final game of the last series with shoulder soreness. Kevin, any update there or any thoughts as to where this might leave him if this becomes a prolonged thing?
Ooh, if this becomes a prolonged thing, I mean, you have Jose Iglesias, and that's what you have. A prolonged thing, I think this is something that Xander's going to have to deal with because it's not going away, right? Like it's It isn't exactly related, maybe they say, to last year's shoulder fracture because it's not a fracture, right? It's not structural in that sense, but he never felt this before that, right? And it's when he sleeps sometimes, it's when he hits that, you know, it bothers him and it's not going away. And he made a diving play the other day. It sort of bothered him. He didn't miss any time. Then he slid in the home plate. The catcher blocked him. And I was like, right then, I was like, that looks like a problem. Couldn't find him that night after the game. And then he was out on Wednesday. So it keeps popping up. So it's something that's going to be ongoing. It bothers him when he hits. I mean, you know, I guess the good news is he hasn't, you know, he's not a great hitter right now. So you're not like losing the Xander Bogaerts of old, even though he had that recent five game hitting streak in which he hit like 570. You know, let's be realistic. He's just not that guy right now. So let's make a little joke there, but not really.
Yeah, I think it's particularly cruel. Is once he starts getting hot, then this pops up and you wonder, you know, it's a little tough on him. I can imagine he seems frustrated to begin with all of this, and to get hurt just as you're starting to hit, that's got to be frustrating.
Yes. And Xander, who's pretty stoic, I think it's there. I don't think any of us are reading into it. Other people that are around him even more than any of us say that he's frustrated. I think that we can see that and we can understand that. And again, like we've talked about it a lot of times, and I get that we have to talk about it because, and that fans want to talk about it. And it's why I feel compelled to talk about it. You feel compelled to talk about it. It's the $25 million a year for the rest of eternity is what it feels like. Right. And best you can hope for is that Xander Bogaerts will pop you an 800 OPS, a 750 OPS the rest of the season. That's it. Stop talking about Xander Bogaerts as Boston's Xander Bogaerts. It's why I've sort of reconfigured my core. My core exists of a group of players that Xander Bogaerts is not a part of.
Right. Right. Padres bullpen has been such an issue. We've written about this. You've written about this in the last couple of weeks, you know, a developing problem because of the starting pitching issues. We saw more of the bullpen that we saw in the first month of the season, I think, here in this last couple series. Pitching a little bit better, Jason Adam, Jeremiah Estrada, and Adrian Morahone. Adrian Morahone got a save the other day with Robert Suarez out. Is it just a matter of kind of regressing to the or improving to their mean here, Kevin? Or what's to credit for the bullpen's resurgence here?
I know I'm going to sound like you're going to be like, what? I would argue it's been longer than a couple series. I would argue that, you know, there was certainly a big time dip, and that they reached a point where they were working a lot. They weren't pitching well, you know, whichever comes first. But I would argue that even in this time where, and I'll go back to the start of to May 20th, the start of a 35 games in 37 days, they've blown five leads. They've had another probably half dozen games I forget how many tied games, but games in which a reliever came in and he gave up a run that caused the Padres to no longer be tied, but to fall behind probably five or six more times on top of the five blown lead losses. I get that. That's bad. They had guys pitching out of order, right? Because their big guys maybe weren't available. One of their big guys, Jason Adam, has struggled in the strike zone, struggled, I think, mostly with his changeup. And then that gives teams an opportunity to know what, you know, hit his other pitches better. Robert Suarez had a high profile blow up in that span. I get it. Take a look at their overall ERA. Take a look at their stranded runners. Take a look at the number of times they have put up zeros. Take a look at the number of times, which is like 30, or I'm sorry, three quarters of the time they've come in with a game on the line, meaning within two runs. It's like 60% they've come in with it tied or within one run. So like we can talk about the five times, or let's say the 11 times that they have failed, the 80 times that they did not when the game was on the line. I argue that this is a really good bullpen. Though to your point, this past two series, this past homestand, they were very, very good.
Very good. I was really intrigued by Adrian Morahone's save. And I know it's a small sample size. And he threw only, less than 10 pitches. Man, it's hard to look at him and not think, man, that guy can make a good closer someday, whether it's in San Diego or somewhere else. I was really impressed with how he got after guys there. Especially just a little bit of a different look as far as seemingly nibbles at 101. Morahone seemed like Morahone attacked. I came away impressed. Again,
he's got stuff. He's got stuff. He's got a lot of stuff. And now he's added a changeup, by the way. And it was devastating the other day to the house kid, Brady, I believe. Riley, it was Riley Adams. Mm-hmm. That's the local kid, Brady House. Got those two mixed up in print one time. Thanks, Phil Lewis, for that save. His strikeout to him, that was the best changeup of the year. It was only his 12th changeup of the year, I believe. It's a new pitch, but you throw that in with the curveball, the knuckle curve, the fastball in particular. He's also has a cutter, but I mean, yes, you are spot on. And I think it could be closer here. Look, I think that Adrian Morahone makes Robert Suarez expendable. I've talked about it before. I feel like every time I've got to say, oh man, bird in the hand, you don't take a guy, you don't ever think that just because a guy's good at pitching the seventh, eighth inning, or he did it the ninth inning one time, that he can take over for a guy who has done it, you know, shares the major league lead, 22 saves. Last year was a workhorse, and I forget where he finished, fourth in saves or whatever. Now going to be a two-time All-Star, Robert Suarez. You don't know. I'm not trying to diminish that. I'm saying, you know, if Robert Suarez is going to opt out, if you're going to trade Robert Suarez, Adrian Morahone, you know, that's a good possibility right there. You know what? Jeremiah Estrada might be too, but I really see Adrian Morahone having grown into his talent.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Padres, Reds, 3-game series starting tonight. Kevin, Cincinnati's on Eastern time?
Yes. Yes.
4:05 start tonight. Let's go over the pitching here just a little bit. Reds to me are interesting. I don't know if they're good, but man, they're interesting to me. Lots of good players. Ellie De La Cruz is sort of their Tatis. You know, it seems like, you know, their run differentials, but just as good, if not, I think a little bit better than the Padres, even though the Reds are in fourth place in their division. I think this will be a tough series for the visitors. We're looking at tonight. We've got Dylan Cease versus Nick Martinez. You know Nick Martinez, Kevin. How do these guys match up?
Look, Nick Martinez appears to be the same Nick Martinez that he was here. He's just got the qualifying offer and is making $21 million this year. It's difficult to explain to you how, and I don't know what it is. It's like a 4-something ERA, right? But it's difficult to explain how valuable Nick Martinez is if you just look at his numbers, all right? But the Swiss Army knife, the guy who I think his last start was like the 19th, and it wasn't very good. But then he's had two, I believe, multiple inning, like at least one plus, scoreless relief outing since. He's going kind of back and forth. He has a gives you a quality start here and there. He gets blown up here and there to give, then gives you these couple relief appearances. This guy is so super valuable. Now the Padres have hit him well since he's left. He certainly is the lesser of the three pitchers that the Padres have faced. In particular, tomorrow's pitcher Abbott has owned them. I mean, I have watched two dominant performances by this kid against the Padres in the last couple of years, and Lodolo's been pretty good too. But love me some Nick Martinez, one of the most quality human beings that you'll ever meet, and is super, super valuable. I know exactly why. I know it was mind-blowing that he got the qualifying offer. I know exactly why the Reds did it. You just don't find players who can do what Nick Martinez can do. That said, the Padres see him pretty well, and Dylan Cease has been rolling. I think it's like a 3.50 ERA, and you'll take that. It's a 3.50 over the last seven starts, I should say. Still above four for the season. You'll take that because he looks every time he goes out almost like he can throw a no-hitter. And so you know that he's going to reel off those seven shutout. He's going to reel off the 7 one-hit innings if this is the Dylan Cease you have.
Saturday, you've got Randy Vasquez against Andrew Abbott. Andrew Abbott, the guy you just mentioned, Kevin, 7-1 with an ERA of 1.79, has owned the Padres, pitched twice, 14 and two-thirds innings, struck out 14, 12 of those coming in 7-2 innings in 2023. I believe it was right around this time in 2023 when the Padres went to Cincinnati. Wasn't it right around July 4th, Kevin?
Actually, the last time I talked to Peter Seidler was that day. Yeah,
that's right. The Padres really mixed up their order against Mackenzie Gore the other day. Is that something that you see happening, say, on Saturday against Abbott? Is this going to be their approach against left-handed pitching going forward?
That's an interesting concept you bring up, that it could be fluid. Look, no matter what players say, they like to know where they're going to be. I would think that Mike Schilt's going to stick with this. If he went to the he said it could be fluid. In one of the greatest answers of all time, by the way, go back and listen to his press conference the other day, talking about why he switched up the lineup. it said absolutely nothing. And why would he? He's just trying to find a way to get this offense going. What's he going to say? These guys aren't hitting like they're supposed to? No. I don't know that we're talking left right here as much as him just trying to get his guys going. I think that there's a lot to be said for any of these guys hitting in any spot, but look, throw the freaking names in a hat, let the wind blow them, and then bat those guys wherever the names land, because something has got to change with this offense. I don't know that it'll be a left-right thing or a matchup thing. I think this is probably we're looking at Arise, Merrill, Machado, some order, and then Tatis, at least for a while. Now, we'll show up today or tomorrow, and it'll be different. Who knows?
My goodness, they need a right-handed bench guy. Nobody's hitting, and I get it. But the need for – I mean, they need somebody who can – I still think asking Gavin Sheets to hit against lefties is – it's tricky. It's tricky given his struggles against lefties, I think.
Agreed.
Yep. And then Sunday, you've got Stephen Kolek versus Nick Lodolo. Jeff Sanders has a great stat here. He's hit 10 guys this year. Nick Lodolo, he's the baseball's leader in hit batsmen. Not that that matters, but, you know, after the Fernando Tatis stuff from the Dodgers series, worth noting. He's good, though. 5-5, 3.63 ERA. Has struggled a little bit in June. Has struggled a lot at home. Allowed one run in 7 innings while striking out 11 against the Padres last year when he was with the Reds.
And that was a Jurickson Profar home run. So, he's not here anymore. So, hey, before we go, I want to make sure that I address this whole Reds thing. You talked about them being pretty good. They're in fourth. The NL Central is every bit as good, if you just look at the standings, as the NL West. They're in fourth at 42-39. So if they sweep the Padres, they'll have a better record than the Padres. Like that's just how close they are. And they're in fourth place with a 42-39 record. They don't have a Rockies team to beat up on. You kind of do with the Pirates, but you know, the Rockies don't have Paul Skeens. You don't get to go to Pittsburgh and hit a bunch of home runs like the Dodgers have done. The Padres sort of did relative to what they normally do. I want to just go over since June 6th, going backward. The Reds are coming off having taken 2 of 3 from the Yankees. They lost. This is the only series they lost in this span. They lost 2 of 3 to the Cardinals. Before that, 2 of 3 versus the Twins, 2 of 3 versus Detroit, 2 of 3 against Cleveland, and swept Arizona. All contending teams. And they won 5 of 6 series. This ballpark is a bandbox. It's Coors Field by the Ohio River. And I mean, it's a dangerous, dangerous series.
Right. One former Padre you will not see, Kevin, in Cincinnati is Connor Joe. He has hand, foot, and mouth disease.
Yes, I've heard of that.
As one does, I guess. Yes.
Emilio Pagan.
Stint reason.
Oh, wow. He was put on the IL. I saw Pagan's that he had there. It. Yeah. Emilio Pagan is taken over as the closer. Yeah. Do you know where Alexis Diaz is, who saved 28 games for them last year?
No, Kevin, I don't. Where is he?
He's in AAA with the Dodgers. They traded for him. So he'd gotten so bad that they traded minor league relievers for each other. And Alexis Diaz will probably come up and end up saving games in the playoffs for the Dodgers, the way things go.
Yeah, he'll probably be their opener for 2 or 3 of their playoff games.
Good call. Yeah,
it's crazy. Padres-Reds, 3-game series. Kevin, I put you on the spot when we do this, and I just found something. I have to share it with you for starters. There is a nonprofit in Cincinnati, Ohio. Are you ready for this? Called San Diego of the Midwest. There is a mural in Cincinnati that says, Cincinnati, Ohio, the San Diego of the Midwest. If you want to buy t-shirts or sweatshirts, you can go to SDOTM, short for San Diego of the Midwest.com, and buy it. You've been to Cincinnati. You're a native San Diegan. Is there anything in Cincinnati that makes it the San Diego of the Midwest?
I suppose that relative to Midwestern, you know, edge, they might have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder like San Diegans do. Like, it's a little big town. That's something I could tell you, right? Or a big little town. Yeah, and I would think of the Midwest would be your would definitely be your qualifier that you need to have. I happen to like Cincinnati a lot. It's laughable. It really is. And I liked how you know, even after, I think that we all got after you'd said it twice that SDOTM would what it meant, but you felt the need to repeat San Diego of the Midwest, just because it's so remarkable that someone, even one person, let alone an organization, would, so a collection of people, would actually say that. Yeah, I guess, they're bitter. Maybe, bitter is the wrong word. I don't know. But, you know, if San Diego hates LA, but kind of also wants to be LA, and don't at me, you know, it's true. Okay. That like we hold ourselves way above LA, right? Like, I mean, we're so much better than them and we don't have all their problems, but then we also are kind of jealous, right? They got all these sports teams and like, you know, theaters and like cool people and stuff like, and maybe that's how they feel about Cleveland, which is sad. And I'm a big fan of Cleveland, by the way, for reasons you don't get to hear about publicly, love Cleveland. Yeah, that's fascinating, Ryan. Thank you. That was phenomenal.
The San Diego of the Midwest. I wondered if it's just because they're on water, but everybody in the Midwest is next to some sort of river or lake. So that doesn't make any sense.
So is
the California burrito the skyline chili of the West Coast? That is my question.
Yes. I thought the nonprofit you were going to talk about was for people recovering from ever having eaten Skyline Chili, just the trauma of it. That's disgusting.
Padres Reds 3-game series starting at 4:00 today. Kevin, enjoy Cincinnati, and we will talk here on Monday ahead of their next series. And gosh, we're cruising into the All-Star break, and that's to me the season has flown by. Probably less so for you.
No, but I get what you're saying. It has, but it hasn't. Yes.
No Korea, no Mexico City for you this year. So that's probably good. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.